Medical Musings with Dr. Joanne is brought to you in part by Evergreen Realty. Commercial and residential property listings. Online at evergreen-realty.com.
Hello, and welcome to Medical Musings with Dr. Joanne here at 88.5 KRFY, Community Radio for North Idaho. I am Dr. Joanne, and I hope you'll enjoy the medical topics that I've chosen to present at 8 a.m. the first Monday of every month. You can also catch the show at 8 a.m. on the third Monday, and our show and every show can be streamed at krfy.org from anywhere in the world. If you enjoy podcasts, you can also listen to a podcast of the show at krfy.org and select the podcast tab. I'm very excited to introduce today's program as we will be talking about therapeutic recreation since July 6th through the 12th is recognized as National Therapeutic Recreation Week. In 1984, ATRA, that's a lot of letters, I know, the American Therapeutic Recreation Association designated the second week in July to increase awareness of therapeutic recreation programs and services that improve the health and well-being of individuals with mental, physical, and emotional disabilities. These programs are provided by certified professionals with master's degrees in multiple different areas, including art, therapy, music therapy, dance therapy, outdoor education, child life specialists, OT, PT, recreation therapists, equine therapy, and counseling. These professionals not only have training in anatomy and physiology, but also in growth and development combined with psychology, all integrated into their area of specialization. They work in many different sites, from hospitals to nursing homes to schools, to rehab centers and private practices, and with clients of varying ages from toddlers to the elderly. I have here with me in the studio today Christy Harton from Hope Brains Foundation, an equine-assisted psychotherapy center. My second guest will be a recorded interview with Bebby LaBrie representing Artful Soulscapes, her practice, which combines art therapy with the great outdoors, all combined to heal the soul. And also here with us in the studio is Susie Perez from our morning show here at KRFY. I call her my executive producer as she enables KRFY to offer these discussions. Hi, Susie, and thanks for being here.
Good morning, Dr. Joanne, and thank you for hosting Medical Musing with Dr. Joanne. You know, Medical Musing provides the KRFY listeners interesting and informative interviews on a variety of medical and health-related subjects. And I wanted the listeners to know a little bit about you, Dr. Joanne. A longtime KRFY volunteer, previously hosting segments of Otto's Eclectic Mix, and now hosting Medical Musing on the first and third Monday of the month at 8 a.m. You are a retired physician who has lived in Sandpoint since 2010 and previously worked in a pediatric practice in Columbus, Ohio for over 30 years, and then covered at Sandpoint Pediatrics once you moved here. Dr. Joanne was a media spokesperson for the Ohio chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics and contributed to print, online media, radio, and television. Dr. Joanne is a mother of four adult children, and we are fortunate to have your show, Medical Musing, as part of our Monday morning programming. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Susie. Now I'd like Christy Harton with the Hope Brains Foundation to tell us about yourself.
Well, good morning. Thank you for having me. I am the CEO of Hope Brains Foundation. I am an EGALA certified professional and recreation therapist and coach. And I provide equine-assisted psychotherapy, equine-assisted learning for about 100 to 120 clients a year.
Amazing. So your first degree was in recreation therapy? Is that what it is?
Yes.
And then EGALA has classes all over the world, I've read. Mm-hmm. That's really amazing. And it's so appropriate that we're discussing the Hope Reigns Foundation and their big silver buckle fundraiser on Friday, July 11th, during Therapeutic Recreation Week. As I've read, there are two methods of equine-assisted therapy. We're going to focus today on the EGALA method, which is the method, as we said, is embraced by the Hope Reigns Foundation. EGALA is a boots-on-the-ground approach with the letter standing for, and tell me if I'm correct or not, Equine Assisted Growth and Learning Association. Is that what the A is? There's also a group called PATH, the Professional Association of Therapeutic Horsemanship, mm-hmm. where their clients actually spend time on the horses. So I love the tagline from Hope Reigns, growth is growth, no matter how small. Tell us about Hope Reigns Foundation and how you started and where you are today.
We began in 2000 with three horses and one client, a licensed clinical social worker. And at the time, I was holding the role of equine specialist. And we started in my backyard. I had been part of an equine-assisted psychotherapy program for 4 years prior, beginning in 2017. And I knew that this is what my passion was because I have a love for horses and helping people. We have expanded now to a 5-acre property with 15 horses, two donkeys, 1,546 sessions a year, and 111 clients last year that we served. So we have grown quickly, and we are making a huge impact with youth, children, adults who have experienced trauma to be able to meet their therapeutic needs.
It's wonderful. And it is a 501c3 nonprofit.
Correct.
The EGALA Certified Ranch. Again, when I was reading about certification through EGALA, there were so many interesting parts, and the fact that you're bringing people of all backgrounds who've done some sort of recreation or therapy with there, so that people can not just be sitting and talking to a psychologist, but they can actually be doing something. And the doing something, I think, really brings in improvement quicker, I hope. I guess that's why I think it's, is that true?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the program trains the mental health professionals and the equine specialists. Where did you take your training?
I was in Utah both times for a 5-day fundamentals with actually the founder of EGALA was who I was trained by. And every 2 years you have to do a 5-day fundamentals, including your 20 units of CE that have to be directly related to equine-assisted psychotherapy, as well as a skill set intensive that you can get to be advanced certified.
And I noticed they also have a pre-test or you've got to watch something before you ever go, and then you go.
And right. And you have to have your hours. Like you said, it's 6,000 hours.
Yeah. For an equine, EGALA equine professional, Susie, they work before they're certified, 6,000 hours, 3 full years of full-time work with hands-on experience with horses, and 100 hours of continuing education.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. I was thinking you've probably had some really good mentors along the way.
Yes.
Also.
Yes.
It's learning from others.
Yes. Clinical therapists, other equine specialists, the founder of EGALA. I've gone to other programs who have multiple therapy sessions going on at one time. So you may have 6 therapy teams because it is a team approach. You have a licensed clinical mental health professional and a equine specialist with the horses and the client. So yes, it's multifaceted. EGALA offers great classes for free that help you start your business if this is something you want to do. I am the networking coordinator for EGALA for the state of Idaho. So I am very active in the processes that go on with spreading the information and bringing all of our EGALA licensed people to trainings that we have to do every 90 days.
And do you have to really love horses also?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, they have a unique aspect to them. There's, as we were talking in the other room, all horses are different, and you have to be able to read them, so to speak.
Yes.
And do you form relationships with each horse?
Yes. Yes. A large part, though, of Egala is having a tremendous amount of self-awareness, though, as the facilitation team, because we really have to work from a trauma-informed care lens. And what that means is we have to leave all of our stuff outside of the arena because our emotional state can affect the horses. And so we have to make sure that we are really focused and concentrating on the horses and the client and separating ourselves in that way, because horses are so intuitive to emotional states of being.
A lot of observation and then facilitating the nuances.
Yes.
Did you grow up with horses?
I did. I did. My friend had a large ranch down the road that we rode and brushed and took care of, and so I was very fortunate.
Then the clients have multiple diagnoses, and so tell us a little bit about that and the ages that are served. I know there are adults and families. We talked a lot about PTSD in the media nowadays, other kinds of trauma, depression, anxiety, grief, loss, ADHD, and autism. I know when I would send patients to therapeutic recreation, equine-assisted, it would often be a child with ADHD or with autism. It's interesting. I got some statistics from the EGALA website that were actually quoted from Mental Health America, and it was sort of frightening because they note that 1 in 5 Americans will have a diagnosable mental health condition in any given year, and that there are 42.5 million people in the U.S. suffering from anxiety, and 8 million in the U.K. And in Canada, the studies they've done show that 1 out of 3 people have experienced a mental illness in their lifetime. New Zealand, 1 in 2, and South Africa, 1 in 6. Not exactly sure why they added those countries, but that was where the Mental Health Association research was done. So, Christy, why horses, and why is this a ground-based program?
Well, horses offer us a safe place to really look at ourselves. We use horses because they have an innate ability to feel our heart rate from 60 feet away. They have the innate ability to see our facial expressions more so even than primates. A study was done not too long ago, and horses can see many facial expressions of which they remember from the person. They equate that with the heart rate. They equate that with the person's emotional state. So that's why we use horses. It takes all the pressure off of the clinical team to really be able to connect with the horses in a way that feels safe and not intrusive. Versus if we do psychotherapy with kids and adults face-to-face and we're asking those very direct questions, there's a very high percentage of kids that just shut down and they won't answer. The majority of our practice, it has to do with sexual assault, trauma, physical assault, neglect. So those kids don't want to really talk about their trauma in a way with a stranger that's an adult. So the horses give that space, that gap in between where we can say or talk about those sensitive topics, and yet they get to go out and do that with their horse, touch the horse, be grounded with the horse, watch the horse react or respond to what they are saying, either verbally or non-verbally. And what that allows us to do is process those things in a very safe, not re-traumatizing way, because it's in their own space. And then with it being goal-oriented, always. So they get to go out, they get to share their goals, look at their goals, and be with the horse in what those outcomes are. And then us as facilitators are watching the behavior of the horses and wrapping that around to how the horses are behaving with this client relate to their goal, their stage of change, and so on and so forth.
That's fascinating. It's mm-hmm. not so much, it's really just being with the horse, mm-hmm. and the horse is the therapy, the therapeutic right. moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, because working from an externalized perspective is very different than traditional psychotherapy. So let's say the client's goal was, I want to work on my anxiety and anger. That's my goal. We will put that out on the herd. Where out here with these 8 horses is anger and anxiety? Why don't you spend some time with the horses and see how they're feeling today? And what will happen is metaphor will start happening. The client will have a story of how each horse is handling anger and anxiety and come back. Then we will be asking questions about the behavior of the horse. So it creates all this metaphor around whatever their goal is. When they're talking through the horse, it takes all the pressure off. But what's really happening when we're relating to the horses is they're talking about what's in here. And I'm pointing to my chest and my heart. And we're putting it out into the herd. So now we're looking at it from an externalized perspective. That's where the healing happens. Because that's where they can see what they need to work on. And then we might introduce some skill set, some DBT skills, or trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy in there so that they can go out and practice those skills with the horses.
Very interesting. Just want to say that you are listening to 88.5 KRFY, and I have with me on Medical Musings, Christy Harton from the Hope Brains Foundation. So again, this is ground-based. Is that for safety, or is it just it doesn't add another layer of something that could be complicating?
Well, riding a horse is very different than sharing your space on the ground with a horse. To be able to ride a horse, there takes a tremendous amount of skill set. We're removing that from the mental health piece.
It just works with the mental health piece.
Right, because the horses are free to move around and make decisions in the arena versus they're being very controlled mm-hmm. when we're riding them or leading them with a halter. So it really allows the horse to be our partner in therapy. They're partnering with us. And there are horses who decide not to partner. If someone has a very high like anger or anxiety that day, some horses might be like, yeah, I'm not going anywhere near that. And then what does that do? That brings up metaphor. Why doesn't that one like me? Why doesn't that one want to be with me? And then we really assess what's happening for the horse.
It's interesting, the therapeutic power of horses, they are so incredibly perceptive and they respond to subtle cues and mm-hmm. Offering these unique benefits. Mm-hmm. The building of trust and relationships and emotional regulation must be quite important mm-hmm. to your therapy. And the clients do get some physical activity. They bring their emotions and behaviors and they impact others. And then they learn how that they impact others by working with the horses. Is that mm-hmm. kind of what it is? We've mentioned many of diagnoses. Which of these many diagnoses do you see most frequently?
Trauma. From sexual assault, physical assault, neglect, PTSD, anxiety, depression, which they all kind of come together or from one or another based on life experiences. So that doesn't mean that we don't see children specifically for managing emotions as it relates to ADHD or autism. We do have some children that are clients that are nonverbal that are coming to just to have an experience that are quite young, that are 4 and 5 years old.
The next thing I was going to ask you was, the ages you serve.
We serve ages 5 on up. Our oldest client has been 83.
And basically the client is with the horses. I know that when mm-hmm. I was a child, I had a horse. He lived in a couple blocks away, and I would just go and be with him. And there was a certain amount of peace that would come over me mm-hmm. just to stand up next to him and kind of, they're very subtle. It's very subtle. And mm-hmm. I didn't realize they were that perceptive.
Well, and we have to remember that the frequency of the earth, they have 4 feet standing on it. All of that frequency comes up into them. And when we place our hands on them, it comes into us, which gives us that beautiful feeling of settled and calm and
connectivity.
Relaxed. Connected, and that happens with the brushing. We do a lot of, you know, you would call it EMDR work with just brushing the horses when we're talking about a trauma story. When we have the brush going across the horse, crossing over our midline, when we're moving with them, maybe we are walking with them. So we have all this bilateral movement with the horses while we are talking about our trauma story. So there's many, many other modalities of therapy also that can be used whilst working with horses in the EGALA model. And it's all just tailored to what is it that your client needs. Each session is different. All clients have different needs. Clients get to choose which horses they want to work with. They'll feel connected to some and not others. So it's a very organic experience. It's not just one, you know, way of doing therapy, which makes it so beautiful.
Is it all one-to-one, or do they have the same horse assigned all the time, or?
Well, when they first come on their intake appointment, they're allowed to meet the entire herd and see if they find any that they connect with. And so they can choose as many as they want, and they usually stay with those horses because this model of therapy believes that you have your own answers within yourself while telling your story. So the horses move with us through the storyline from week to week, kind of like a book.
So is it a one-to-one? I guess it'd be one-to-one-to-one. So you'd have your therapist, the client, and the equine.
Right. Person? It's a team approach. So we have the licensed professional, the equine specialist, the client, and the horses.
Okay. And then the intake happens the first week, obviously. Is mm-hmm. that just one-on-one, just one therapist and one and the patient? Or
yes. So we do an intake with the parent or guardian over the phone. Then the client comes. We ask questions based on that information. We meet the horses. And we usually, the second half of that hour, we will actually start therapy. Just something very basic as, would you like to share something with the horses that you'd like to work on? And then out they go with the horses.
And the usual length of therapy, I think you told me, was 12 weeks, but some people stay a whole year. Is that true?
Right. If we're working on emotion regulation, some anxiety, depression, depending on where it came from, we're about 12 weeks to be able to gain a really good skill set to manage those emotions. If we're working on complex trauma, then we're looking at about 50 weeks.
Okay. How do you handle the fear of horses?
Isn't that a metaphor? How do we let fear rule our life and make decisions for us? It's a great place to start. People get to look at fear. They get to see how it affects their life. Where did it come from? Do I need to change it? Is it safe to be in fear? I mean, it can create all kinds of metaphor that is up for great discussion. Mm-hmm. There have been many clients that have been fearful. However, we do have donkeys, and somehow for most, you know, some of those people, the smaller animal feels less intimidating. So we may start there, but we work through the fear.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really what, you know, such an important part of it, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Also going over your website, I noticed that you're using primarily a breed called Paso Fino. Tell
yes.
us a little bit about those horses.
Paso Finos are from South America. They are a Spanish gated horse, so they have a 4-beat lateral gait, so they're very smooth to ride. But the main reason that we choose to use Paso Finos is because they are incredibly intelligent. Not that other breeds aren't, but this breed is really, they react two emotional things, very different than, let's say, a quarter horse breed that is much less reactive.
There are horses that are calmer than others.
Yes.
They have a different energy field, so to speak.
Yes.
And so you found some breeds really are mm-hmm. perfect for this kind of work.
Yes.
Is there a client who generally benefits most or least from the program?
Most or least? I think you can find healing with equine-assisted therapies for any diagnoses, any need.
And most of your clients are referred, I'm thinking.
They're referred from pediatricians, medical doctors, school counselors is a big one too. Children's Advocacy Center for all the children that come in for sexual assault. Sheriff's Department, Police Department. We get referrals from all agencies.
Fascinating.
Does anyone contact you directly from hearing about it?
Yes,
knowing
word
about
of mouth.
It?
Mm-hmm. Word of mouth. You know, moms groups who they found that one child had a great success, and so now they are looking at this as a resource.
What's the cost of therapy to the family, and do insurances pay, or do you need a prescription?
You don't need a prescription. Referrals are great because then we have even more background on clients. Client sessions are $185 an hour. It is billable by insurance with the 90837 psychotherapy code. We do not bill insurance. We give a super bill. For the clients who are Medicaid, that's part of our fundraiser. That's part of our donors that we have come in. There are several charitable foundations in North Idaho that contribute.
I mean, that's really wonderful.
Right. So as a nonprofit, you are still raising funds.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Yes.
It's a big part of
beating the bushes.
We have very few cash pay. Yes. We have boots on the ground raising funds.
But it's interesting, just like in any other diagnosis, the patients have to know their insurance. There would be people that would call us and say, can you write a letter for speech therapy, because they won't pay for if it's developmental. Mm-hmm. Like, well, if your child hasn't had a head injury, it's developmental.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're coming to the end of our time. So thank you, Christy, for leading us off for this July edition of Medical Musings with Dr. Joanne, focusing on therapeutic recreation and especially equine-assisted psychotherapy. I really appreciate your contribution to the health and welfare here in North Idaho. This is 88.5 KRFY, Ponderay. Hello, and welcome back to Medical Musings with Dr. Joanne here at 88.5 KRFY. We're highlighting Therapeutic Recreation Week, which is July 6th to the 12th on today's show. As we discuss, therapeutic recreation in any form is so very valuable. In fact, art therapy, music therapy, dance therapy, poetry, journaling encourages the expression of emotions related to illness and hospitalization, along with promoting faster healing. These therapies actually reduce the perception of pain, along with increasing insight, self-awareness, and self-discovery. And they are found in both the inpatient and the outpatient setting. I have here with me Bevy LaBrie, we will continue our discussion and focus on art therapy. I'm so fortunate to have her here and to talk about her program, Artful Soulscapes, that feature the healing power of art, nature, knowledge about the human body, and trauma, all in an environment very much outside. I probably shouldn't call her simply an art therapist, as she is a whole body, whole person therapist. In fact, that's the tagline on her website: trusting intuitive wanderings into whole person healing. Welcome, Bevy. Please tell us something about yourself.
Thank you so much, Joanne. What a generous introduction. I am, as you mentioned, currently an art therapist through my business, but I have a long history in a lot of different kinds of whole body healing. And I started out as a as a youth worker back in my early 20s and worked with at-risk youth and developed a wilderness program for them and an art space for them. And, you know, those are kind of the roots of some of these things that I'm doing now, and spent some time working with wilderness therapy programs, actually out in nature, doing all of our work, doing outside living, canoeing, climbing, camping out in the Boundary Waters in Minnesota. And during that time, I discovered even more my love of just the creative process in general and everything sensory and colorful in the world. And I did my master's in art therapy at that point, and just started working with lots of different people of all ages, just starting building on my other experiences thus far, and worked with the EMILY program, which was a eating disorder clinic in all levels of care with them. So outpatient, inpatient, and doing groups and supervision. And then that all led me to wanting to create my own business, which is what you shared about, which is called Artful Soulscapes. And I just love what the variety of things that I get to do with people to help them connect to healing in their bodies and really come more alive and be connected to their own intuition, and as well as to their own courage, their own sense of belonging within their body, and their own sense of safety through our mid and lower brain, which is different than just talk therapy. It's all about accessing emotion, memory, sensory experience, shifting everything on a whole different level. And so I kind of like say I go in the back door, and it's usually pretty fun what we do. It might be through trekking, and I do a trek over in Europe. It might be through actual working with art materials in my studio space with people. It also is through retreats and workshops and more intensive deep dives into healing and wellness. That is a small nutshell. I can go for a while.
Small nutshell. Yeah, your program is so multifaceted, and there's such a range from actual art, which I guess I would call more traditional art therapy, to mountain climbing and, as you said, trekking in Europe. Let's first start with art therapy. I can see you have some paint behind you. I think that's paint.
Yes, there's a lot of paint right here. I'm in my, where I see clients right now, actually. It's there's a big table that we're always kind of side by side working, and we don't sit very often and look at each other. I think there's so much more safety in the body when we're side by side with people walking, we're creating, journeying on some type of adventure of sorts. It's just like anything that I can do to help people's bodies feel more at ease is the way in my mind, because it's helped me also.
Is that why it's called somatic process art workshops as opposed to art therapy?
Yeah, you're very insightful. Yes. So the somatic piece, the more that I've done this, the more that I realize I really think that is the niche that I have found the most healing in and have found in others, which is, you know, trauma is held in our bodies. Safety is felt in our bodies. And aliveness and intuition is in our bodies. And so many of us are just completely disconnected from all of those cues, and as well as that agency to be able to shift something and feel a sense of safety in the body. So yeah, somatic meaning body. And that's breath, that's the way we move, the way we hold our body, the way we engage with the materials or on the rock or while walking, even how we hold our body says so much about how we're feeling inside, but also somatic in the realm of being able to express and have language for what's held inside the body on an emotional level. So a lot of what I do is helping people connect to a visual language, mm-hmm. or a somatic language that gives them a sense of power in their own life to tell their story or to have some shifts.
It's so very interesting. Can you take someone who has no art, ability to create something? I know that I'm one of those without much art ability, but I remember, you know, in
grade school, obviously, doing all the colors and then putting black on it and you know, carving out, you know, some picture or something like that. My perspective or my, you know, never quite, you know, is right. So I guess I know you do a house with the slanted lines and things like that, but I'm a very primitive artist, I guess.
I love that you brought that up. I actually really find so much joy in helping people connect to that really childlike way of creating, because it is in every one of us. Like we all used color and form and movement as children to express things. And then at some point we're kind of told this is the right way you do it, this is the wrong way you do it. And then we either say, okay, I am a creative person or I'm not. And then we start building on that. But I have a really strong belief through all my kind of work with people as well, as just this is a really deep belief of mine, is that every one of us has that in us, and connecting back to ourselves is connecting back to that creative childlike part of us. And, you know, sometimes that happens through cooking, sometimes it's through gardening, sometimes it's through art materials. But in engaging with art, it's like 20 minutes a day of doing that. It helps our brain in the same way that 20 minutes of walking helps our body. So it's in itself inherently is so healing for our body. So yes, the answer is yes. And how we would engage with materials is very much about play, especially when we're starting. And it helps ease some of that pressure. And then people start to develop what they love. Mm-hmm. Maybe they find a process that really fits for them, or color palette that they just keep doing because it's theirs, or it's the way they want to express. And so there starts to be safety and freedom and more expression.
It brings me back to thinking about, again, childhood, and there was a book, and it would be how to draw a horse or a dog, and that you'd put an oval in, and then you know, it was all, but mine never looked basically like people who can sit down and make an animal really look like an animal. But anyway, your creative roots retreat is amazing. And I wish so I could go to Sedona or Joshua Tree, because again, as I read, it combines yoga, art, and nature with excellent vegetarian meals. Tell us a bit about those retreats.
It does. I'm so excited to share that with you. We actually just locked down the place for our Joshua Tree retreat. It's on a 107-acre hot spring preserve. So there's going to be hot springs on the land. And we're going to be immersed in nature as we're also guiding people into these different pieces. So I guide people through these process art experiences that are for anybody. Like a lot of people might come and be like, I don't call myself an artist, and they find this freedom. Or maybe they find that there was part of them that just kind of comes to life and gets unlocked. And then they do that more with their own children, and it like opens up something for them. So I'm guiding through all of these pieces, and my co-leader, Gabby Coletta, is a yoga and meditation teacher and Ayurveda practitioner also. And Ayurveda is just a beautiful form of medicine that integrates the natural elements. And so that's all part of our retreat too. So she's guiding us through two times a day, yoga sessions, meditation, some education about Ayurveda. We have a chef who's cooking for us, and it's a 4-day, three-night retreat, and it's beautiful. We've done it now for 4 years. We've done it 5 times and just been able to serve so many people. So
do you primarily get new people, or do you have repeat clients who come to that?
Yeah, both actually. We just had some people sign up that have been there before, and people asking, when are you doing this again? That's why we offered the Joshua Tree option, just as another possibility. Who knows, this might expand internationally. Like, we have ideas. So
now, you are a definite creative person who's really working with people of all ages and all abilities, I guess. And then I read about the Grand Marais colony in Duluth. That was really interesting. I've been to the Duluth and froze to death, but anyway.
It can be really beautiful and warmer at times also. But yeah, Grand Marais, actually, it's this little town about an hour and a half north of Duluth on the very tip, the Arrowhead. It's like, just feels just magical. It's right on Lake Superior. The corner of the Boundary Waters and Lake Superior. So you're just surrounded by nature there. This is a 3-day experience that I do 2 days of painting, process painting experience, and then one day of the art journaling. And I've created an art journaling online course also just to offer for more and more people. But this practice, let me show you these. This is an example of like an old book and taking an old book and creating an art journal out of it. And wow. It's a practice. I might have probably 20 of these now at this point, but I just love sharing it with anybody I work with. We do it at the retreats. We do it at this art colony experience. I do it in individual sessions. And it's just like a way to move your muscle, try things, have a safe space to break all your rules that you would ever have for yourself. So one of the days at the Grand Marais Art Colony experience is art journaling, and 2 days is process painting.
Very interesting. It was started by the Minnesota School of Art. They don't have any input anymore, or do they send people, or?
Not right now, no. But it's been there a long time, and it's a beautiful, it's a small town, but it's actually been voted one of the best small towns in the nation. So it's a really beautiful little place with an artistic community.
It's kind of like Sandpoint.
You know, it really does remind me of Sandpoint quite a lot. Yeah, it does. I love it.
We were in New Zealand, and Christchurch too was just like a big, basically, or Queenstown rather, was just like a bigger Sandpoint on the lake and had.
Oh yeah.
But they do things like skydiving, and I mean, there's always things floating in the air. You're hiking treks in Europe too. Tell us about some of them.
Sure.
Where you've been and how many people.
Sure. Yeah, I'm getting ready to leave on one right now, actually. We're hiking from Meiringen, Switzerland to Domodossola, Italy, and it's about a 100-mile hike, 90 to 100, depending on which way we go, through the Alps. And it's a cultural experience. It's a, you know, we help people train for it for about 6 months before the actual trek. We meet every month just with people through a Zoom session to answer any questions. We kind of see it like as training for a marathon. And so we give them a training program and help them just get their bodies in a form where they feel strong and they aren't getting injured. Then also on these treks, we integrate group process, self-discovery, some of the art therapy pieces, yoga, space, different writing prompts, different ways to engage with creativity and drop into that mid and lower brain and the senses and become really present. I think a lot of what I do is really helping people become really present and then helping get to decide how they want to show up in that presence. And so we had people as young as 19, as old. This year we have a group that they're all, I think, over 60 and have been, you know, just they're committed to their health and have trained hard. And it's going to be an amazing experience. But my co-leader on that, this is through Lori Hanna's business, Barefoot Souls. And she was somebody who ran a wilderness therapy program that I worked for way back. So that's how that, I've been doing this now for 11 years with her, and she's amazing also.
It's interesting. It reminds me of like the group called MIT Marathon and Training, you know, that you work with them ahead of time. You said for 6 months, is that right?
Yeah, we've been meeting since February once a month. Yeah. So, you know, you start to also, I think it's more than just a hike. It's about community. It's about self-discovery. It's about health. Again, it's whole person. It's about being present and helping support people with their courage and fears and things that come up.
It's so interesting. I was telling my daughter the other day, we were in Rocky Mountain National Park, and it was a fairly long hike. And I was telling her that my husband has run 3 or 4 marathons, but yet when we hike, sometimes he wants to stop or turn around. And it's like, it's disappointing to me in that that's like my marathon. I want to finish. I want to get to the top because I've never run a marathon. I've actually never run more than 5 miles, I guess. And that was a long time ago.
So. Well, hiking is really good for the knees. It's a little easier on the knees, and you can certainly get that same sense of like huge accomplishment, get to the tops of some of these views. It's just the Alps are amazing. And I mean, here in the U.S., it's just, Rocky Mountain National Park is amazing. There's so many great views.
So, yeah, coming to closure, getting to the top is really important. And so I can understand how the people that are working with you are really benefiting from it. Mm-hmm. Your most recent newsletter discussed mountain climbing and Ten Sleep Canyon in Wyoming. Tell us a little about that. I imagine it combines digging deep in your inner self, too, with that same feeling of accomplishment and inner strength.
Yeah, it does. And there's, you know, there's such a spectrum with climbing. There's rock climbing on actual faces. There's mountain climbing on glaciers and, you know, utilizing all those skills. And then there's kind of the combination, too, like crossing glaciers to get to the faces of rock. And, you know, there's so many pieces that are like a mirror of life. And in the realm of just knowledge is power, I think, on one scope. So the more that I can understand, the more that I can feel powerful in the situation and the unknowns. But it's also about learning how to slow my breath and like be present with what comes up when I am in an unknown and what happens in my body. And so there's so much that's a mirror, and you're so right about it. Really, you know, the perseverance and determination and courage. And I just created an online course. It's called Body Mapping for Climbers. And it was really about exploring some of these pieces for people who are wanting to understand, like, why am I feeling so blocked here? Why am I just shaking in my body? Why don't I feel like climbing anymore? And it's always related to something else in life. You know, it's the stuff that we have in our bodies that have caused us to not feel safe in some way. So I love climbing, as I do art and all these kinesthetic things, because they are a mirror and they're a parallel process to what's actually happening in life for people and me.
That's so interesting. When we were traveling in, I think it was New Zealand, instead of taking notes on what someone said, there was a gal who did a picture of each place that we went to. I mean, she sat there on the bus drawing between stops. It was really amazing. I mean, you know, those of us would journal a little bit, or at least write down the places we'd been or how we felt or how it looked. And she was actually doing a picture for her little calendar of a report of where she'd been.
How long were you in New Zealand for?
About 2.5 weeks. And that was, it was a trip that was delayed. We were supposed to go in April of 2020. So we ended up not being able to go till 2022, I think.
That's wonderful. Yeah. Place I'd love to see. I haven't been yet.
Yeah, it's a really, really interesting place. And especially when you're here in the mountains. I remember my mother-in-law saying, it just looked like the West in the United States. It's like, yes and no. I mean, it's just amazing to be in another country, and it was absolutely beautiful. So I know that not all your clients have a specific diagnosis, but are there underlying traits or themes that you see in the people that come to you?
There are. And it's interesting, you know, the traits are often things such as kind of a lens of a creativity or something having happened at some point in their life than being connected to something that was creative. Many of them are visual and kinesthetic processors, kind of like this person who was drawing to process her experience. They might already have a lens that their body just needs to move, or they see things and process really visually. They're very heightened sensitivity. People who find me often, and all of these things are often really parallel to myself too, but a real heightened sensitivity to stimulus and to just sensory experience. So one of the words that's used often in therapeutic realms is neurodivergence. Mm-hmm. And there's kind of a full spectrum of neurodivergence to just like an slight oversensitivity to like a more extreme version of either attention or not attention, or ability to focus on one thing or not focus on one thing, and just how the brain is working. And, you know, I think every one of those people has a deep feeling. There's often also a deep sense of feeling, but not always a way to communicate that feeling. So there's a lot of stuff that's in the body and felt in the body and kind of trapped in the body. So those are some of the traits that I see. But often what that will lead to, or often some of the things that people have experienced with those traits are trauma, whether that be loss, lots of grief, which also kind of coexists with some addictions because I haven't known how to express things or find a sense of power in the middle of things. So there's these sideshows that happen in order to find that. And that, so that when I think of any type of addictions, it's kind of a sideshow from our main show, what we're really needing or creating or made to do in life. And also just a lot of anxiety is often there, trapped in the body, a sense of kind of hypervigilance or protection, mm-hmm. and also just various people in all stages of life and life transitions. And there's sometimes a blocked feeling, which sometimes it's a blocked feeling connected to their creativity, and that's connected to the trauma or something else that's happened in life that's created a misalignment of values. So these are just some of the common things that, as I think about the people that I see of all ages, I used to work a lot with adolescents. Right now, though, it's from probably 19 to 65 or 70. I think it's the oldest person I see right now in my actual individual work with people. Mm-hmm. And at retreats, too, it spans that all the way. And on the treks, as I talked about. So even in this whole spectrum, these are, I would say, all of these things I just mentioned come up no matter what age people are at.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So, I would imagine that it was like depression, grief, loss of some kind, whether it be loss of a job, loss of a parent, loss of a loved one, getting to make that extra step, giving them some motivation to move on.
Yeah, loss of identity too, sometimes loss of a sense of safety or community or a sense of belonging or a sense of courage, like all kinds of things.
Can you think of someone without their name, obviously, like your best success or your biggest failure?
Are you talking a person or an experience?
Probably a person, someone that you've really, really helped or someone that you just couldn't get through to.
Yeah, that's good. I think I've had a couple. When I started working with them, they were youth, and now they've gotten to see them move into their, one of them in their 20s, one of them even in their late 30s now, and I've gotten to meet her child and all of that. I started working with her when she was in seventh grade, and for the first 6 months, she wouldn't talk to me at all. And there was so much abuse in her family and lack of safety it was just not safe at all. So we would play together and we'd build forts together and we would make things together and we would throw the ball around. And, we just entered through a place of kinesthetic movement and play. And over the course of time, she started to feel safer, and she was a big part of the wilderness program I started at the youth program that I worked with, the nonprofit. And and so over the course of time, she has developed into a beautiful human with her own child and is now a mom and is married. And just so I get to connect with her still. So that's a success.
And that would be a big success. And so they found you through the adolescent program. I was wondering how other people find you too.
Other people find me. I have a website, so artfulsoulscapes.org, as well as bevilibriart.com. Both of those will kind of, you can reach me through those. Mm-hmm. blibri@artfulsoulscapes.org is my email.
And that's how I found you.
That's how you found me. Yes. Through Psychology Today is a place where when they're wanting more therapeutic support, people will find me that way. And also lots of word of mouth, retreats, Google searches. Sometimes people will come to the retreats and then want to do individual work with me because they find something that opens up. Yeah.
Very interesting. Is there anything we've missed? Quite a lot. I mean, you do so much.
Oh, I just absolutely love my work, and I think I love the people. I love humans, and I love getting to watch people come to life again through all these different experiences. It just is such a rewarding work. So
nice. Well, basically, to summarize the value of Bevy's work, I have two quotes from her website. One, and it's listed, so I guess I can give her name, Tori: "I reconnected with areas within myself that have been really orphaned and neglected for quite some time. Thank you so much for guiding so beautifully and providing such a wonderful container." And Allie said, "I truly feel rejuvenated and immersed in the process. It was wonderful to be in the creative flow. Thank you for creating magical opportunities for art and creativity." And I thank both Christy and Bevy so much for contributing to July's Medical Musings with Dr. Joanne on therapeutic recreation. Thank you all for listening. Please do remember that this is a medical information show. It does not substitute for discussing your concerns with your medical provider. If you missed any part of the program, catch the show at krfy.org under the podcast tab. For more information, check out the EGALA program, Hope Reigns, the American Recreation Therapy, and Bevy's Artful Soulscapes. Please tune in next month on August 5th when we'll be talking with Dr. Michael Osterholm from the University of Minnesota and CDRAP, the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy, and National Immunization Advocacy Month in anticipation of back to school. This is 88.5 KRFY. Community Radio for North Idaho.